so maybe we start with mantra. Om Bhadram Karnebhi Shrunuyama Devaham Bhadram Pashyemakshabhir Yajatraham Sthirairangaihi Stushtuvansas Tanubhir Vyashema Devahitam Yadayuhu Svastina Indro Vridhashravaha Svastina Pusha Vishvavedaha Svastina Starkshyo Arishtanemi Svastino Brihaspatir Dadhatu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. So this is the Atharva Veda's Shanti Mantra. And we finished the whole first chapter last time, 16 shlokas, which is quite amazing. But I wanted to compare this concept of Rai and Prana with Rigvedic concept of Soma and Pusha, to see the meaning of it in the Vedic sense. That time it was already built up, it was there in the air, so we could really do it. Now it's no more in the air, so we do not know what we are talking about. So we need to revive this, to understand what it is all again. So I will have to go through text very briefly to remind the major concepts. What was the first chapter about? So, six rishis come to Pippalada Rishi to ask him questions about Brahman. They are all realized in the self, they know what Brahman is, but they still come to him to learn from him about Brahman. And Pippalada Rishi agrees that he will teach them only after them living with him for 1 year without asking questions. So they lived with him, and the first questioner was Kabandhi Katyayana Rishi, who asked his first question. Bhagavan, kuto va ima praja prajayante iti. Lord, whence are all these creatures born? In our language, where all these creatures are coming from? And the question is quite psychological, deeply profound psychological. If I ask you where all this comes from, then you will have to really go deep into that to answer me. Just imagine yourself wanting to know where all this is coming from. So what would you say? That it would make sense in the dynamic presentation of knowledge. You would have to dwell on certain things. You cannot answer only metaphysically, saying something, you know, like it all comes from God. This is not enough. There has to be something more to it. So it's interesting how he built his answer. He told him that Prajapati, the creator, became Prajakama, became the one who wanted to have progeny. So why does he say that? Because actually the creator could stay without progeny. He was alone there and he didn't need anything to have, because he is in himself, he is already absolute. Needs nothing. For that reason he had to have a desire to have progeny. Otherwise how would this come into being? It's not a necessity. This world is not a necessity, it's a desire of the Creator. So satapo tapyata, he flamed in tapas, satapas taptva, and having flamed in this tapas, concentration of his own consciousness, sa mithunam utpadayate, he creates mithunam, the pair, rayim cha pranam cha. This is the pair of rayi and prana. ityetau me bahudha prajav karishyatah iti. These two will create for me many creatures or many children of many natures. Aditya havai pranaha, and the sun is indeed prana, rai reva chandrama, and rai is indeed moon. Rai vayatat sarvam yad murtam cha murtam cha, and the moon of the rai is all this, what has form and has no form. Tasmat murti reva rai, therefore rai is murti, embodiment. I cannot translate it as a form, because it is a form, but it is an embodiment. But look at this formulation, which is absolutely not logical. Rairva etat sarvam yat murtam cha murtam cha. Rai is everything, whatever has form has no form, therefore murti, the embodiment, is rai. How come?
So without embodiment it's also rai?
Yes, without embodiment is not necessarily only a form, but also formless can be also embodied. And that is the embodiment. Shobindotan says it a bit differently, yet truly all this universe formed and formless is matter. Therefore form and matter are one. It's quite different in Aristotle, where form and matter are two different things. Athaditiyah udayan, and here we're coming to the main concept of this chapter, which is the most difficult to understand. It's a Vedic version. Athaditiyah udayan yat prachim disham pravishati tena prachyan pranan rashmishu samnidhatte. Yad dakshinam, yad pratichim, yad udichim, yad adho, yad urdvam, yad antara disho, tat sarvam prakashayati tena sarvan pranan rashmishu samnidhatte. Now when the sun rising enters the east, then absorbs he the eastern breaths into his rays. Now when we say breaths, we mean life force. He is rising, the sun, with the life force of all creatures, and he is setting down with the life force of all creatures. That's what it is said here, and it, not only here but in other texts also. But when he illumines the south and the west and the north and below and above and all the angles of space, yea, all that is, then he takes all the breaths into his rays. Look in this dynamic supramental picture of the world. The sun is the supramental manifestation. When the sun is rising, he is rising with the force, with the life force of all the manifestation. Whenever he moves or rises or illumines, there he is united with his rays, with all the creatures, because they are nothing but a manifestation of that sun, of his rays. That's what it is being said here. Sa esha vaishvanarah vishvarupah. Therefore he is called, he is this fire that rises. This universal man, male, of whom all things are the bodies. Prana, the breath of existence. This is that which was said in the Rig Veda. Vishvarupam harinam jata vedasam parayanam jyotirekam tapantam sahasrarashmi kshatadhavartamanah pranah prajanam udayatyesha suryah. Fire is this burning and radiant sun. He is the one lustre of all knowing light. He is the highest heaven of spirits. With a thousand rays he burns and exists in 100 existences. Lo, this sun that rises, he is the life of all his creatures. That's exactly what we said. Now, this sun, in its dynamic movement and its manifestation through all the creatures, is identified with the year, with the concept of time. And as we know, the concept of time was different in mythical structure of consciousness. It was circle. Time was not linear, as it is now in our rational vision. It was including space. So, Samvatsaro, and it's very interesting that Samvatsara is the name of the year, when Vatsas, the cattle or the kine, or how do you call these? Calves, are being gathered every year. Vatsa is calf. When they are gathered together after being born, it was a measurement of 1 year. Samvatsara. Bringing calves together. So that year of one circle of life is indeed the creator, Prajapati. Tasya ayane dakshinam chottaramcha. So Shubhendra says, the year also, that eternal father, and of the year there are two paths, the northern solstice and the southern. Here we are coming to that what is known as Devayana and Pitriyana, and we were discussing it at length last time, that the sun is moving not in one way, and all the creatures move not only with the sun, but they have certain dynamism there to manifest the divine. And that dynamism is known by two paths. This year is known to us by two different paths. Ayane, dve, two movements. Dakshinam chottaramcha, southern and northern. Tadyeha vai tad ishtapurte kritam ityupasate te chandrama sameva lokam abhijayante. Now they who worship God with the well dug and the oblation offered, deeming these to be righteousness, conquer their heavens of the moon. These return again to the world of birth. Therefore do the souls of sages who have not yet put from them the desire of offspring take the way of the southern solstice, which is the road of their fathers. And this also is matter, the female. Now, as we saw last time, there is no such phrase as put from them the desire of offspring. It is added by Sri Aurobindo. Te eva punar avartante, they come indeed back. Tasmad ete rishayah prajakamah, therefore these rishis are desiring offspring. Dakshinam pratipadyante, they follow the southern path. Those who desire to be embodied, to have offspring, to have a body, material, they follow the southern path. Esha havai raih yav pitriyana. And this is indeed raih, which is pitriyana. Athottarena tapasa brahmacharina shraddhaya vidyaya atmanam anvishya adityam apijayante. Etad vai prananam ayatanam, etad amritam abhayam, etad parayanam, etasmat na punaravartante ityesha nirodha tadesha shloka. But by the way of the northern solstice go the souls that have sought the spirit through holiness and knowledge and faith and ascesis. For they conquer their heavens of the sun. There is the resting place of the breaths Their immortality casts out fear. There is the highest heaven of spirits, thence no soul returns. Therefore is the wall and barrier, whereof this is the scripture. And there is one more scripture thing, but what is interesting here, that suddenly this wall and a barrier mentioned on the Devayana path, that not everybody can enter it. There is a certain protection against it, because the soul has to manifest something and not to escape. So we have a vision, a very interesting vision. The manifestation of the divine takes two different hands, so to say, left and right, yeah? Dakshina and Uttara. Dakshina will be right and Uttara will be left. Northern and southern. If we face the east, we will see that the left will be north and the right will be south. That's why these hands are called also Uttara and Dakshina. So by these two hands the manifestation takes place. Both are necessary, but at the same time there has to be double movement. Movement of being embodied in the matter and being growing through, evolving out of matter. And both movements are necessary for manifestation. As it was mentioned before, that Savitar hymn is the same, where he is introducing the whole being into the darkness with his one hand, and with another hand he pulls it out of the darkness into light. These two movements he does simultaneously, embracing the whole night from both sides with his hands as wings. So all we are moving simultaneously, we are involved more into matter, and at the same time we are evolving out of matter with our spirit. But we cannot escape, and we should not leave this manifestation. Therefore there is a barrier, Nirodha. Therefore is the wall and barrier. We cannot go only one way out. We should be involved and move out. So how this concept was introduced in other Upanishads is quite interesting, because I looked into this in the Isha Upanishad, and I found this concept is clearly worked out. And Sri Aurobindo writes about it in the most magnificent language. He explains why these two, birth and non-birth, are mentioned. Sambhuti and asambhuti, vidya and avidya, knowledge and ignorance, birth and non-birth. And if you remember these lines, andham tamav pravishanti, into the blind darkness enter those who worship him as non-becoming. Tato bhuya ivate tamoya usambhutyam rataha, and even into the greater darkness those who worship him as becoming. Now Sri Aurobindo works on this concept, and he introduces it in a very interesting way. This is becoming, non-becoming. These are two paths of Devayana and Pitriyana, two hands of Savitar, yes? One is leading you to non-becoming, to become free. Another is leading you to become. One is leading you to non-becoming, another is leading you to becoming. So these two paths, he comments upon them in the Isha Upanishad in this way. The self outside nature does not become. The self outside nature does not become. It is immutable as well as eternal. The self in nature becomes. It is the same self. It changes its states and forms. This entry into various states and forms in the succession of time is birth in nature. This is exactly that Traich, or that Pitriyana. Because of these two positions of the self, in nature and out of nature, moving in the movement and seated about the movement at the same time, active in the development and eating the fruits of the tree of life, or inactive, and simply regarding. There are two possible states of conscious existence directly opposed to each other, of which the human soul is capable: the state of birth and the state of non-birth. The human soul is capable of these two states. Man starts from the troubled state of birth. He arrives at that tranquil poise of conscious existence, liberated from the movement which is the non-birth. The knot of the birth is the ego sense. The dissolution of the ego sense brings us to the non-birth. Therefore, the non-birth is also called the dissolution, vinasha. Vinashena mrityum tirtva sambhutyam ritamashnuti. Birth and non-birth are not essentially physical conditions, but soul states. A man may break the knot of the ego sense and yet remain in the physical body. But if he concentrates himself solely in the state of dissolution of ego, then he is not born again in the body. He is liberated from birth as soon as the present impulse of nature, which continues the action of the mind and body, has been exhausted. On the other hand, if he attaches himself to the birth, the ego principle in him seeks continually to clothe itself in fresh mental and physical forms. So there is no end in this when he identifies himself with the ego. Now Sri Aurobindo makes two observations: the evil of the extremes, one, and the second, the good of the extremes. And you will see how his thought works. Neither attachment to non-birth nor attachment to birth is the perfect way. Makes sense, no? None of these, as Isha says, none of these separately will lead you to the realization of that consciousness. They will lead you only into darkness. Yes? Vidyam cha vidyam cha yastad vedo bhayam saha. Only the one who knows both simultaneously, knowledge and ignorance, he will reach his consciousness. But not one, not following one path of knowledge, none of these separately is perfect. For all attachment is an act of ignorance and a violence committed upon the truth. Its end also is ignorance, a state of blind darkness. Andham tamah pravishanti. They enter into the blind darkness. Exclusive attachment to non-birth leads to a dissolution into indiscriminate nature, or into the nihil, into the void, capital V. And both of these are states of blind darkness. For the nihil is an attempt not to transcend the state of existence in birth, but to annul it. Not to pass from a limited into illimitable existence, but from existence into its opposite. The opposite of existence can only be the night of negative consciousness, a state of ignorance and not of release. So Sri Aurobindo does not accept the movement towards negation as the movement of liberation exclusively, yes? If you take it exclusively, it has to be backed with another movement. Then it makes sense. But if we take it exclusively moving towards the void and liberation, nirvana, it leads us to darkness. On the other hand, attachment to birth in the body means a constant self-limitation and round of egoistic births in the lower forms of egoism without issue or release. This is, from a certain point of view, a worse darkness than the other, for it is ignorant even of the impulse of release. It is not an error in the grasping after truth, but a perpetual contentment with a state of blindness. It cannot lead even eventually to any greater good because it does not dream of any higher condition. Now, what is good about these extremes is, on the other hand, says Sri Aurobindo, each of these tendencies pursued with a certain relativeness to the other has its own fruit and its own good. Non-birth pursued as the goal of birth and a higher, fuller and truer existence may lead to withdrawal into the silent Brahman or into the pure liberty of the non-being. Birth pursued as a means of progress and self-enlargement leads to a greater and fuller life, which may in its turn become a vestibule for the final achievement. Vestibule for a final achievement is birth. And non-birth, where you can find the purity of Brahmic spirit and you can rest. The perfect way. Now he offers the third way. But neither of these results is perfect in itself, nor the true goal of humanity. Each of them brings its intended portion into the perfect good of the human soul only when it is completed by the other. Brahman is both vidya and avidya, both birth and non-birth, the realization of the self as the unborn and the poise of the soul beyond the dualities of birth and death. In the infinite and transcendent existence are the conditions of a free and divine life in the becoming. In the becoming. The one is necessary to the other. It is by participation in the pure unity of the immobile Akshara Brahman that the soul is released from its absorption in the stream of the movement. So released, it identifies itself with the Lord, to whom becoming and non-becoming are only modes of his existence, and is able to enjoy immortality in the manifestation without being caught in the wheel of nature's delusions. The necessity of birth ceases, its personal object having been fulfilled. The freedom of becoming remains. For the divine enjoys equally and simultaneously the freedom of his eternity and the freedom of his becoming. It may even be said that to have had the conscious experience of a dissolution of the very idea of being into the supreme non-being is necessary for the fullest and freest possession of being itself. That answers all our arguments about being and not being during this discourse. This would be, from the synthetic standpoint, the justification of the great effort of Buddhism to exceed the conception of all positive being, even in its widest and purest essentiality. Thus, by dissolution of ego and of the attachment to birth, the soul crosses beyond death. It is liberated from all limitation in the dualities. Having attained this liberation, it accepts becoming as a process of nature, subject to the soul, and not binding upon it. And by this free and divine becoming, enjoys immortality. Now this is the vision, why these two are necessary simultaneously. This is the whole paradox and puzzle of our life. We have two movements within ourselves. simultaneously coexisting. And this is the justification of life. This is how life works. This is the device of life. Life, which unites heaven and earth, that in between, the union of both. The movement towards heaven and movement towards earth is interwoven, justified in this life concept, or sacrifice, because sacrifice takes place in that particular junction. I read it for so long because I wanted to come back to Prashna Upanishad with another view. Why this Nirodha is there, this barrier that we should not escape, we should not get out easy way. There is a problem if we all start leaving the manifestation. So that's why not many of us are given this gift of mukti. Only few of us, few of those who had to do something for this manifestation. Otherwise there are not many who are really attaining to this liberation. Now, this Rayi and Prana are differently dealt in Rig Veda. So here I was planning to go through this hymn last time, but we didn't have time for it. But today I think we may go through and justify the first chapter with the concepts from Rig Veda. So I'm taking the hymn of Gritsamada Rishi from the second book to Soma and Pushan. These two deities. Soma is that nectar immortality, Raih, yes? That moon is called Soma, and Pushan, who is the sun god, from root push to grow. There is one growing god, solar deity, and the other is Soma, who is representing that substance of Amrita, ambrosia. It's a beautiful hymn. I will go verse by verse. Soma pushana janana rainam janana divo janana prithivyah jatau vishvasya bhuvanasya gopau deva krinvan amritasya nabhim. Soma and Pushan, generators of all wealth, parents of heaven, parents of earth. These two protectors of the whole universe were born, for the gods created the navel of immortality. So there was something created, the navel, the knot, within this, what is called Hiranyagarbha. The golden embryo was conceived in the ocean of infinity. And that was the Nabhim, or the navel of immortality, where immortality could manifest, otherwise immortality could not manifest. This is also the image which comes from embryonic life, from our embryonal thinking, our embryonal memories, yes? The waters, the embryo, the navel. It is through the navel that the embryo is connected to the mother and feeds. It is this navel in Vishnu iconography, from the navel of Vishnu Narayana, there is a lotus coming up in which the whole earth, the whole universe is created. On this lotus, Brahma Svayambhu, the Prajapati, sits there looking in four different directions, creating the universe. It is in his navel, from his apana, from his life, the force comes. And it's very important for the next chapter, the life force. So heaven and earth are considered to be the parents of the gods, but themselves they have parents of these, and these are Soma and Pushan. In the Rig Veda there is a fundamental concept of Agni Soma, of fire and water, the eater and the food, so to say, the energy and the substance of delight. Prana and Trayi later in the Prashna Upanishad. These two are considered to be the parents of the heaven and earth. Soma is the element of substance and Pushan is the force which is increasing the substance, make it move or grow. It is by heaven that the earth is great, and by earth the heaven is manifest. Imau devau jayamano jushanta imau tamansi guhatam ajushta abhyam indra pakuvam amasvantah soma pushabhyam janat usriyaso. Happy are all, for these two gods are born. They hide away the darkness, which is unhappy darkness. Because of them, of Soma and of Pushan, Indra could make milk ready in the raw cows. Now, these are symbols of the Veda, yes? Raw cows. Yes, he made payasam. It is a mysterious statement about Indra making milk, symbolizing knowledge in the raw cows, rays of the Supreme Light, ready for use in this manifestation. Well, we will not dwell on it. We will go ahead and then we come back if necessary. If you have questions. Soma pushana rajaso vimanam saptachakram ratham avishvaminvam Vishu vritam manasa yujyamanam tam jinvatho vrishana pancharashmin. O Soma and Pushan, your chariot with seven wheels, measuring all space, still is beyond the universe. You too, O mighty bulls, are urging it towards the world, yoked by the mind, and running in two opposite directions. It is controlled by five reins. Now, what is interesting here, that manifestation takes place when it is yoked by the mind, manasa yujyamanam, in such a way that it moves in two different directions. And this is exactly where these two movements of Devayana and Pitriyana go. They move in different directions, towards north and towards south. In opposite directions moves it, yoked by the mind. It has pancharashmin, and this pancharashmin can be a symbolism of the five indriyas. Yes? Five senses. This is the ratham, the body, which has five senses, controlled by five rays. Seven chakras. Well, there was a proposition that these are simply tantric seven chakras, or maybe even yes, and it makes sense. Yes, it makes sense. I am not dwelling on these all these other points. I want you to only to see once a picture. Divi anyah sadanam chakra uccha prithivyaman yo adhyantarikshe. Tau asmabhyam puruvaram purukshum rayas poshum vishyatam nabhimasme. One has made his seat above in heaven, the other on earth, and both are presiding over the space in between. Now look at this beautiful picture. One is in heaven, Pushan, and Soma is on earth, and both are presiding over the life region, Antariksha. May they release for us the wealth, all growing, with many gifts and of much power, and the navel may they release in us. The navel of immortality created by the gods has to be vishyatam, loosened in us. We have to have an access to immortality. We are tight by this knot. We are not free. Vishvani anyo bhuvana jajana Vishvamanyo abhichakshana eti Soma pushanao avatandhiyamme Yuvabhyam Vishvavratanajayena. One has created all the beings, the other moves, perceiving all. One is the perception, other is the substance which is perceived. It is our signified and signifier. O Soma and Pushan, make our thought grow. Together with you, may we conquer all the oppressors. Pritanajayena. Pritanade, those oppressions or oppressors, may we conquer. Hostile armies. Dhiyam Pusha Jinvatu Vishvaminvo Raim Somo Raipatir Dadhatu Avatu Devi Aditir Anarva Brihadvadema Vidathe Suvira. This is beautiful. May Pushan activate our thought, Dhiyam, impelling the universe, Vishvaminva, and Soma, the Lord of Wealth, Raipatih. Again, Rai, the same word which is used in Prashna. He is the Lord of Rai. Raim Dadhato should establish this wealth, Rai, luminous, silver wealth. Avatu Devi Aditi Ranarva. May Aditi protect us. May the Divine Mother protect us in our growth, who has no limits. Anarva. May we, all-powerful, express it wide in the sacrifice. Brihad Vadema. May we speak wide, vast. Vidathe Sumirah. We, with perfect power and courage, in the gaining of knowledge, may we speak wide this truth. Now, these are, of course, this is the Vedic knowledge. It works differently than Upanishadic. You can see there are no concepts here. There are direct kind of impressions or actions. So, if you have some questions or observations, you're most welcome. Well, at least it's a symbol. It's a clear symbol. We can see it here, embodied in this, in the matter, yeah? In the body. Even in the in tantric tradition, the right eye, the left eye, are called sun and moon. Yes, we have this Ida Pingala, two different rotations of the of energies. One is sun rotation, other is a moon rotation, and in between there is Sushumna. So we have this vision clearly here, you know, left and right hand pointing to different directions.
So we're looking at this.
Yeah.
We are
looking.
It's not an easy task.
Yes, it's not an easy task. It's already a sacrificial representative of the sacrifice of two movements, opposite. That, it is said here.
It is not.
Vishuvritam, they are moving in different directions.
For me, it's always when you say it's not an easy task, I would more say what was shown before. It is always evolution, it is always development. That I see more. Because we can become more conscious of every part, more and more, it becomes more complex. If we, how we do it, recognize how we do it, where we do it, and where we put something for. So we can stress them all through us.
Yes, as Shubindu says, these both are complementary. they justify each other's existence in this manifestation. And that's the device of this manifestation. Otherwise, how would he who alone is would be manifested? This is, he found the device. As it is said in Prashna Upanishad, when he wanted praja, praja kama prajapati, he created prana and rai, or man and woman embracing each other. He separated them and said, they will create many creatures for me of different natures. And they did. That is the device, this double.
Yes.
In one piece and also not one piece. We have also partners. But some creatures, maybe in the history of evolution, we can find creatures who are not having partners. They are self-sufficient. They have two parts in them, male and female, and they can procreate within one body. It's a very rare device. Somehow nature didn't go for that, because most probably the varieties will be less. Yes, if there is a disease within this creature or something, there is no possibility of choice. Yes, it is.
This circular movement, then it makes it clear why, I mean, if there's nothing in matter, what will the witness be witnessing?
Exactly, absolutely. Non-birth is that witness in us, and birth that involved being in us. Yes, but function. Function too, as Savitar moves us out of the night with one hand, and with the other hand he pulls us, even pushes us deeper into the night. That's how it works. Well, it's unimaginable. But once we start dwelling with this concept longer, understanding and seeing it everywhere, we will start having different answers. Yes, that's what he was explaining. We read exactly this. He was saying exactly this, that there are two ways to liberation. One is when you want to get rid of ego together with nature, so to say, regardless to the manifestation of the divine, and then you are coming to the darkness. That's what Isha says, to the blind darkness and to those who follow only the knowledge, and to a greater darkness those who follow the ignorance, or opposite, who follow the ignorance and who follow the knowledge.
Which is a very big difference here, very shocking for me.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful thing to understand, that basically to be in this manifestation of the divine is already a sacrifice. So it is already taking place. But those who neglect this and say to hell with all this world, for their own, so to say, personal achievement, for their own personal liberation, for the mother it looked very selfish. She said they are changing nothing, these people. They're absolutely useless. She was very rude with this sannyasis. Because, of course, she is the mother. I mean, she... For her, this creation makes sense. It's the creation, the manifestation of the divine. It's not just for the sake, it's not an imprisonment from which we have to get rid of as soon as possible.
So that's what, when I asked, you know, it has a function. To think that it is not on that level, it has a function. It has something as it escapes. It's not that function.
No.
We are looking for the liberty.
Yes.
It's for the balance, the growth.
Yes. That's what Prashna Upanishad is elaborating here in the Vedic terms, that the sun is moving with the life energy of all creatures. And Here we have the same, notice, the same image as we had in Fushan and Soma. Do you see this? It's a very interesting. I didn't see it before. I just kind of chose it by chance to. Panchapadam pitaram dvadashakritim diva ahuh parayardhe purishinam athheme anye upare vichakshanam sapta chakre shadare ahur arpitam iti. Five portioned, some say, is the father, and has 12 figures, and he flows in the upper hemisphere beyond the heavens. But others speak of him as the wisdom who stands in a chariot of 6 spokes and 7 wheels. Now again, this chariot, again 7 wheels, chariot represents this body, you know, as we know it from other Upanishads and the Gita. And there is the 7 wheels in it, most probably chakras. And there are 6 spokes, and I am not sure what it is.
What does it mean, spokes?
Those spokes in the wheel, you know. Rays, 6 rays of sun, of light.
But in this year, really, from the last time, it's like both hemispheres are referred to, maybe.
Yeah.
The first one is the upper, and the second one is the first to the lower hemisphere, like in Pusha and Akhmi. One is in heaven and one is in earth.
Yes. Maybe it is this shat, 6 aras, 6 rays, 6, maybe this is 6 cornered star. I have no idea. What do you think?
The image of the Egyptian sun with the hands keeps coming to me. Does this have any connection with this image? Do you have anything to do with what is described here?
Well, the Egyptian sun is maybe, I do not know, I didn't see. There are 6 hands or something?
I don't know, I think there are a lot. You've seen
it. Ah, there are a lot.
The sun, at the end of each ray, there's a hand.
Well, kind of, must be, yeah, something. 6 hands. Six hands.
Is the 6 the number of creation?
6 hands. I could say immediately what these 6 hands means for me in Vedic knowledge. These are Brahmachatushpat Prana Anapana. That's what it is. Because in the next chapter we will see this image again. These 4, speech, mind, seeing and hearing, will be arguing who is the main. And they will be speaking with prana, and prana will be the main, and prana creates apana. So prana apana, and these create 6 different faculties of consciousness, or different approaches to perceive. Yes, as rays, perceptions. Maybe, another maybe. Since we don't have any explanation more than this, though. So then it is compared to the month, then it is compared to the day and night, yes, the same way. And it is said suddenly, unexpectedly, that we were talking about this, to choose the path either to go to the body, or to choose the path to go out of the body, yes? To be embodied, to procreate, to be procreated, or to be not procreated. Yes? These 2 movements are there. And one is to be related to the night, consciousness of the night, another is to be related to the consciousness of the day. And when they are mixed, or they are misplaced, it's a loss of energy. So the interpretation can be, if in the time of the day, in the time of rising, one is going down, it's a wrong movement. So if there is a time to collect stones, as Bible says, and the time to throw stones, you cannot throw stones when there is time to collect them, and opposite. So everything has its time, breathing in and breathing out. These two movements, ascent and descent. In the time of ascent, one should not descend. In the time of descent, one should not, or maybe one should, ascend.
Perhaps the methods of working with plants and herbs that take into consideration when they are grown is also etiquette, and also the night and the day.
All right. I didn't know that, yeah. Of course, yes, right, right. It's interesting, yeah.
Also the Vala company in Germany, they also do that. Mm-hmm. Mm. And from the ashram also.
And there is more puzzling statement coming, two more, which I want to complete our observation of today and maybe to make some comments. Annam vai prajapati, and prajapati is indeed food. Tato havai tad retas, and therefore that is retas, the flood or the stream or the semen, the conceivement. Tasmad imav prajav prajayant, and from that stream all these beings are being born. So Sri Bindu translates, food is the eternal father, for of this came the seed, and of the seed is the world of creatures born. And one more puzzling thing. Tad ye havai tad prajapati vratam charanti te mithunam utpadayante tesham eva isha brahmaloko yesham tapo brahmacharyam yeshu satyam pratishtitam. They, therefore, who perform the vow of the Eternal Father, produce the twin creature. So what is this twin creature is these two movements. Two movements have to be produced simultaneously, and they follow the Eternal Father. Not one. But theirs is the heaven of the Spirit in whom I establish ascesis and holiness, and in whom truth has her dwelling. Now why he says this is quite interesting. Doing these two paths, one has to have inclination to go Devaya. It's with inclination towards Devayana, towards liberation of the spirit, one should do two. And not with inclination towards doing that Pitriyana, one should do Pitriyana. Yeah, motivation should be different. Motivation should be with Devayana and the action with Pitriyana.
That's almost the equivalent.
And of them is Brahmaloka. Yes, of them. Theirs is the heaven. Tesham asau virajo brahmaloko na yeshu jihmam anritam namaya cheti. Theirs is the heaven of the spirit, the world all spotless, in whom there is neither crookedness, nor lying, nor any illusion. So these are the conditions to manifest the divine. But the movement has to be both. It can't be one out of it. Into monastery or into... One has to be engaged in life. This is the message of the first chapter. If you have some observations, thoughts, it's time.
Here's also understanding why for a long time in India already the established ascesis and holiness was followed up, because it was lost in one other part of the...
Now why it has to be said, because that may make impression that everything is all right, yeah? Whatever I do, that's what happened in the West. Because since we are all materialists, then there is no end to that materialism. It's not like that. There has to be some ethical, some spiritual ideal in building up the material manifestation. That's why he says it at the end, that it should not look like that everything is allowed. It's not that. The preference is to be for the divine, for the path of the divine. Devayana. Yes? Makes some sense? Something is clearer than before of these two? Or is as unclear as before?
Yeah, I agree.
Good.
Something bothers me. This circular movement of time and space, perhaps, I mean, quite probably, this, I haven't understood it from you, the synthesis of yoga, but it seems again and again when Sri Aurobindo was dividing up all these aspects of mind, talking about evolution, I seem to see a complete linearity in his way of thinking. Now, I suppose it's just the way I see it, or did he actually perhaps change his way of perception during his life?
I think it's both. He has both. He always comes out and comes back, no? He always moves, breathing in and out. You will see how he writes. He never goes on linear, but if you follow him logically, of course there will be a linear. No, but you can see any chapter you take of Life Divine or Synthesis, or you will find that he is always complete. He never speaks about things that he left something to say in the next chapter, and now we came to that which I will speak in the next chapter. It never comes. The chapter will be complete in itself. So you can take it out of the text and it will be sufficient to explain the whole thing. It's a very different dynamism in it. The same with cantos in savagery. You will be surprised that every canto is a complete vision.
That's different because it's a poem and it has this magic...
Not only, but also metaphysically, I mean as a content-wise, yes? So he is never leaving it open to the next, that in the next chapter I will tell you about this. Yeah? Not like that. There is another way. Why I'm saying circular? Because what is time? Yeah? When Earth is moving around the sun, or we are breathing in and out. Is it time? I breathe in and I breathe out. When next time I breathe in, is it time? I mean, what is time? Have you ever thought about it? Is it really linear movement? Or maybe it's not linear so much. Maybe it's a movement within itself somehow. Yeah, it's within itself. So that's why Earth is moving around the Sun and Sun is moving around the center of galaxy. All the round, moving round. Why we all move round? Even head. It's a very strange thing. What is really time? It's a pulsation. Now this pulsation may manifest something. And this pulsation, this sun, yes? Sun which is rising with the energy of all creatures, is the symbol of time. The whole universe was born as 1 year. 1 year. What is this year? Yes, it's a... Yeah, we have to shift our perception a little bit because we are not thinking, we are thinking in linear way. Time is like, you know, we can measure it, it's never repeating itself, starting from Heraclitus. We never can enter the same stream of water. From there we know what time is, but what do we really know about it? Maybe we can enter the same stream twice. Who knows? On another level, on the highest. Maybe he does all the time. And Mother says on the supramental level the time looks completely different. It is as if this universe is being created every moment of time. Every moment there is a beginning and the end. Pulsation, this pulse. There are as if gaps in between. as if. There are no gaps. But our mind makes connection to all of that. Yeah?
It's like flashes from the mind.
Something is, has to support it. Why it continues? You wake up in the morning and you are still... It's you, and this is Auroville. You can't believe it. No? Or you can believe it. That means you are deeply ingrained in time. you don't have that fresh perception. Is it you still looking to the mirror? Oh, it's you, the one here. Time is a very puzzling thing. And of course, there was a beautiful concept of time by... look beautiful, okay. Gurdjieff and Uspensky. Yeah? Uspensky had a beautiful concept of time. For the first time in my life, I understood what time is. Yes, and he deals with the fourth dimension of time, of space as time. Fourth dimension of space as time. And he says in his book, if you look into the... on the picture when you were young, or small child born, and into the mirror, you will not find similarities, many, some, yes. And you wonder, is it really the same person? Of course we don't wonder. We are afraid to wonder about these things, otherwise we will go to mental hospital. But he dared to wonder. And then he saw that actually all the space from his childhood, when he was born, all the space where he moved, where he traveled through, all the spaces, if you combine them into one space, collect all the spaces. Now this is the space where we sit. If we carry it and collect it to the another space where we were before, all the spaces. But it's the difficulty is that at the same time the earth rotates, and it runs around the sun, and sun runs around the galaxy. We are never in the same space. That space we left long somewhere there, we will never come to it. So if we collect all those spaces into one space, we will have this fourth dimension, which is called time. So uninterrupted space perception is this time force. Yeah? Which spread, which pooled this time over the period, in the movement of space. So space is nothing but stretched, pulled out by time, something. The movement in space is defined by this power of time. That's why everything moves. It never stays, because time is here. And Shubhendu gives a very direct definition of time. Time is Shakti. Time creates the universe. It's a power which pulls all those spaces, moves the galaxies. That's why we are never in the same space. That's why we are getting old. That's why we die. Because we are never in the same space. We are always facing some other space, some other constellation. And that's the beauty of it. So, what is time? Is it linear or it's... I think it's both.
Plato said something about this on the retreat. Does anybody remember?
No, I've been not retreat, so... So, it is time... So we will finish with a moment of mantra. It's 13 minutes. Om. Bhadram karne bhishranuyama deva bhadram pasye makshabher yajatra Sthirarangaihistushtuvansastambhirvyashemadevahitam yadayuh Svastina indro vridhashravaham Svastinav Pusha Vishvavedah Svastinastarkshyo Arshtanemi Svastino Brihaspatir Dadhatu Om Shanti.